Welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Drive fast and try not to crash. Good morning and welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and the legend, here he is, Steve Alvarez Brown and Super GT, here to join us on the show and to talk about everything that is GT Sports and eSports. Welcome, Steve. It's great to have you back on the show.
Hello, Hugh. Yes, thank you for having me on here again. And hello to all the viewers.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic that you've come on the show. You've had a very, very busy week and you've really had an incredible year. You're just about to reach 300,000 subscribers on YouTube. I mean, tell us, what have been the highlights of the year so far?
Oh, yeah, it's been an amazing year. As you say, yeah, nearly 300,000 subscribers. Hopefully that'll be a nice Christmas present. We'll get that. But yeah, I mean, earlier this week, driving a McLaren race car around the Top Gear test track, the Dunsfold Aerodrome, I think that's got to be the highlight of the year, if I had to pick one. You know, just getting behind the wheel of a proper race car, which is the first time I've ever done that. Yeah. Absolutely awesome experience. But also just, you know, traveling to a lot of these Gran Turismo Sport World Tour locations. So I went to the New York World Tour, Salzburg, Monaco. So getting involved with that was really good as well. Really enjoyed that. And I suppose the third thing I think that sticks out in my mind for this year would be the kart racing videos. So
yeah,
I've been doing a lot of karting my whole life, but only this year I really decided to properly make commentated videos on them, and they've done really well. Especially maybe like the Spa video. So I went racing at the kart track at Spa, the F1 circuits. There's a little kart track inside it. So that was a really good trip. The video from that did really well, and all of the karting videos have been well responded to. So I'm happy with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great watching them. I do like the commentary that you do on your karting videos. And I always think when you do these amazing pit stops, and how dangerous it looks, because you're driving out and your fuel cap is still, you're kind of putting it back on as you're, you know, racing out of the pit lane. And I thought, my goodness, you're going to be quite brave to do that, and to get everything on the right timing and head off. But they're really, really fast. I mean, they look incredible. I mean, I've only done kind of basic amateur go-karting, you know, at kind of local tracks and things like that. But the stuff that you've done, it's proper professional stuff, really, isn't it? I mean, it's maybe a arrive and drive, but you've got to be good to be able to get in there, and it's a proper championship. I mean, you're with obviously racing against some of the other top guys from around the world, and what's it really? Is there quite a good camaraderie between you all?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's a really good, it's called Club 100. It is a club. It really is a club. Everyone's very friendly. Yeah. And at the sharp end of the grid, the quality of drivers is actually very high. So it's not easy to win any of these races at all. So it is a arrive and drive. Anyone can just turn up and do it. But at the same time, there are really good drivers there. But it's brilliant. It's really good. Racing in that series, it's a good mix of, it's fun, but it's also competitive. So I like that.
Yeah. And because you've done karting for quite some time, haven't you? You've been on and off, because I mean, in the background, we can see your trophies there. Are some of those kind of things that you've won in go-karting in the past?
Yeah, these ones behind me on the chest of drawers there, those are sort of more recent ones, but I've been doing it for nearly 20 years. I think my first proper kart race was 2001.
All right.
And I've been racing nearly every month since then. So I've done a lot of races, a lot of karting.
I
thankfully had a little bit of success.
Yeah. Now, you see, some people will think actually that I'm not interviewing Steve Brown at all. It's actually Alex Albon, because you look remarkably similar to Alex Albon. And many people have quoted that, are you sure when you don't do a video at a certain time of day that they might expect, and then they're watching Formula One, that actually it's you in that car. But it's from your incredible history here and from go-karting, I mean, you've really been motor racing from a very young age, and it's kind of stuck with you all this time. And what would you say you're hoping to, how would you want to develop that from here?
I've not really had any sort of concrete aspirations, really. In terms of YouTube, it's just grow the channel. I don't really have any specific aims. I suppose I would like to race in cars in some way. Obviously, earlier this week, driving in the McLaren has given me a taster of what it would be like. And it's cool. It's very good. But I don't really have any concrete aspiration. I would just like to be in a car, racing a car, you know, in some way, shape or form.
So do you think, have you got your racing license? Is that something that...
No, that I don't. I don't have a car racing license at the moment, although I think that could be...
Yeah, they're fairly straightforward to get. Yeah. Oh, you get that, no problem. One of my friends did it at Silverstone many years ago, and back in 2007, and it was a whole kind of week's course. And at the time, it cost about £6,000. But it was amazing. You got two races at the end of it on the Silverstone Stowe circuit. And as long as you didn't crash, you got your racing license at the end. So you had to do all these things. But it was very, very detailed. They walked you around the whole track. And many of the drivers who were doing the tuition were really, really fantastic, actually. So it was that you know, had a good history of racing success. But no, that would be, we could certainly see you in a Super GT car with those incredible liveries and things like that that you put on. I mean, imagine from driving this McLaren, the noise must have been something, because that's the first thing you get when you get in a proper racing car, isn't it? The noise is something huge.
Yeah, the noise was, it wasn't overwhelming, but it was very nice to hear that, you know, the sound of the engine is right behind you, very, very close indeed. But to be honest, I wasn't, I wouldn't say that I was overwhelmed by it. I thought that it might be a bit scary. I was nervous, but not so much because of driving a really quick car, but more because I was afraid that I might not perform well. I might look a bit bad. I might be slow. That's what I was nervous about, really. But I wasn't really overwhelmed by the car at all. It felt comfortable. You get in there, you're strapped in very tight. It's basically no room to move your head. You got the seat sort of wraps around. You can't move your head much. Head is pretty much touching the roof of the car, and you're strapped in really tight with the seatbelt. So you're really comfortable in there. I was actually very at home straight away. So it's actually it felt good. It felt good in the car.
It's amazing. I think that's ultimately what all we kind of amateurs, you know, like myself, who are, you know, we have our gaming seat and we play Gran Turismo and things like that. But ultimately, that's kind of what we would love to be able to do. That, you know, it's nice playing it on a machine, but to get a chance to actually drive a car for real is something really, really special. But of course, you've had an incredible year with the Pro-Am series as well, haven't you? Because you were in Monaco, and now was it Nürburgring? Where was it? Because you've won it twice with the Pro-Am series, wasn't it? Two in a row as well that you did, and no one else had done that. So you're kind of in a kind of championship. You've done something that no one else has done before. And for most people, when they play a game, you know, they don't expect to meet its creator. And of course, you've met the creator of Gran Turismo Sport in none other than New York. And we saw some of the pictures on that, and it looked incredible. So what was it like to be around all these, you know, the heads of GT Sport, and in an environment that it's so exciting? You know, you're racing against all these other famous people, and it must be something else.
Yeah, it was very special, actually, because I've been playing Gran Turismo since the late 90s, more than 20 years. So Gran Turismo has been a part of my life. I didn't play 5 and 6, but I mean, I played 1, 2, 3 and 4, and now Sport. So I've played a lot of Gran Turismo. So it seems it was crazy kind of just to see the guy who created the whole thing. And it was just nice to have some sort of recognition, I guess, because I've been making a lot of videos on Gran Turismo Sport, and for them to finally say, oh, okay, we like that, come along to the event. That was just, it was just a nice thing to have this year. And just being around all the players, they're really good guys.
They look like really funny. They look like that's a good guy.
They're a really good group, really funny. Obviously, there were some rivalries. We saw that in New York with Fraga and Hizar, although they're great mates now. But, you know, on the most part, they're just really funny, great to be around. It's great to race against some of them when I could. And, it's just a brilliant experience going to these World Tour events.
One of the highlights, I have to say, of your videos that you've done for me is when you raced against Montoya earlier on in the year, and he was not happy at all the fact that you beat him and did it quite significantly. But it was when he was on the podium and he was interviewed, and he, what was it? What did he say? It was something like, it shows if you spend too much time in your in your basement or in your bedroom. That's the only reason you could for not beating you. But I think you well and truly beat him and put him in his place. And I have to say, I got a good chuckle from that. But you've met some big time Formula One drivers. Well, of course, you met Lewis Hamilton just a few weeks back, didn't you? And of course, you raced against him.
Yeah.
Perhaps you might want to give us a little bit more as to how that race went.
Yeah, sure. So we had an exhibition race against Lewis Hamilton. So he came down as part of the world final in Monaco.
Yeah.
So we normally had the pro-am, but this was a separate race. It was an exhibition. It was the kind of same format, though. So we had a media person teamed up with a pro Gran Turismo driver.
Yeah.
So Lewis Hamilton was on pole. He was with Igor Fraga. I overtook him quite quickly. He was at Spa, five laps.
Yeah.
I got past him on the Kemmel Straight. So just after Eau Rouge, Radion.
Yeah,
overtook him straight away. We pulled away. I was in second. And then at the end of the first lap, he came back and we fought for a couple of corners. So it was actually surreal to be fighting against Lewis Hamilton. I know it wasn't real, but it was
him. As it can be. Yeah.
And later that lap, it was coming through the Lacombe chicane at the end of the Kemmel Straight.
Oh, yeah.
I was sort of on the edge of the curb, and he just sort of came through, and we made contact, and he just edged me out onto the gravel and grass, and I span it round, couldn't keep control. So I overtook Lewis Hamilton. I got overtaken by Lewis Hamilton, and I got punted by Lewis Hamilton. but to be honest, it's quite an honour, you know,
to get
hit off by Hamilton. If it was anyone else, I'd be livid, but because it was him, it's like, okay, I can tell that story.
Yeah, well, that was something else. But I mean, it's really, I mean, did you ever imagine that doing your YouTube videos would bring you into these kind of fields of media success and meeting all these famous racing drivers and racing against them?
Not really, especially in the early days. In the early days, it's just upload videos and hope that they get some views.
Yeah.
But in the last few years, I suppose 2017 was where it started, because that's where I got invited to the New York event for Forza. They had an event there.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I got invited to that, I thought, okay, well, maybe there is a chance here to get to events and meet people. Racing against Lewis Hamilton was that's just surreal. That's something you can't really predict that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And not only that, I was sat next to him. So that made it even crazier.
Yeah, remember he was looking at your settings. He was going to see what kind of braking balance you had and everything else to see if he could get an advantage.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was quite strange because he had Igor Fraga with him. So we all know Igor Fraga is one of the best Gran Turismo sport players in the world, if not the best. And he was just saying to Lewis, like, "Yeah, this guy is pretty quick." And so Lewis was looking over me, "Oh, you're fast. You're good at this game." I was like, "Oh, no." So we had some discourse, myself and Hamilton, not much, but just a little bit. It was just amazing. It was amazing to have that experience.
So if you could, now that you've met Lewis and you've raced against him, would there be anyone else that you would like to, I mean, a top three of racing drivers that you would fancy having a race against?
I think number one would have to be Kimi Raikkonen.
Uh-huh.
He's always been, for me, one of my favourite drivers, especially in these McLaren days.
Yeah,
he's the one I always supported. So I would like to meet him. I would just like to meet him. To race him would be awesome. But maybe just the McLaren guys, the current drivers, so Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz, I think that would be a cool, if we could get them two and myself to have a little race on some sim, that'd be a cool video if that could be possible.
Well, when I get my sim centre up and running next year, not next year. Yeah, what isn't it? Yeah, 2020. Hopefully by the summertime or thereabouts, we can maybe arrange for that. That would be quite fun. But I'm sure there would be a big enough audience to, they'd be very keen to see how you would get on with all of that. But in terms of, because now going back to Lewis Hamilton, he's got this new DLC on Gran Turismo Sport, and you've once again shown your expertise by being able to beat it in about an hour and 45 minutes, I think, was it, that it took you to do all of those tracks. Is there a secret there of getting those lap times down? Because at the nearest I've done is about 0.2 on a couple of his circuits, but that's as close as I've gotten. You did it pretty quickly. What would you say is the key for beating those times?
Yeah, so I've done it three times now. First time it took me 3.5 hours to get all diamond, then then 1 hour 45, then 1 hour 25.
Oh, wow.
On that last try, it took me 15 minutes to do all of them, apart from Willow Springs, because that one is especially difficult to beat him. I think the main things, you just really have to exploit his weakness. And there are some corners where you realise he's quite slow out of that corner. Or one of the main things is on Gran Turismo, you can get away with quite a lot of what looks like corner cutting, but the game doesn't think it's corner cutting. So Nürburgring, Grand Prix circuit, final chicane, if you get two wheels on the curb and two wheels on the grass, the game thinks that's fine. So you can do that and you can gain half a second on Lewis just through there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just have to exploit the places where he's not that good, basically.
Do you think he really tried hard? Because I know in his video he said he did practice for a good bit of time. Do you think he set pretty high standards? You know, if you can beat those standards, do you think that's showing that you're quite high up in the game? You think overall?
Definitely. I think barely well under 10% of drivers will be able to complete this on all diamond. His times are very good. I think, you know, most of the top split FIA players or, you know, people who are SS ranked will probably be okay, be able to beat him. But players like Igor Fraga and Mikhail Hazar, they could probably do it first time. But most people wouldn't be able to do it, I don't think. I think it's one of those ones where it's actually quite difficult. And you know what? I kind of like that. Because I think in a lot of games these days, it's too easy to just complete it. I mean, most of the Gran Turismo sport, single player is too easy. Yeah, so it was good to have something that was a bit more difficult and challenging.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that gives me hope then, because I'm only 2/10 away at Monza and about 2.5/10 away, I think, at Brazil. I haven't even tried the Nürburgring, the long 13-mile lap yet, but I think there's a long way to go on that one. But anyway, I think it's really good that he did it, because it gives us all a chance to see where we are and to try and get a bit closer. I mean, I know that looking at some of the times, some people have beaten his times by about a second or a second and a half, which is really quite a big thing. But it certainly helps to improve your racing skills and your time trial skills, I think, if you can get up to those kind of levels. And did you find it quite did you enjoy doing it, or do you think, did you see it as quite a big, a good achievement to get, you know, to be able to get those diamond times?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot from it. And I think it was an achievement to finish it, because I was going through them in order. First two, I think it was Dragon Trail, Seaside, did it in 10 minutes. Next one did it quite quickly. Then I got to Willow Springs and I was like, okay, no, this one is tough. You have to be almost perfect on your lap, because his lap time is about 4/10
away, isn't it? Yeah.
His lap time is only about 4/10 away from what now is the world record.
Wow.
So normally I'm like 1 second away from the best people in the world, but on this one you have to be 4/10 away. So you really do have to get that one dead right. Yeah. That one's really tough. So I was pleased to be able to complete especially the Willow Springs one.
Yeah, because that's like, I think it's a 111.3 thereabouts, isn't it? Yeah. And I can only get a 112.3, although I haven't tried it for a wee while. So I've got a bit of work to do to get. I think a goal time is even under a 112, I think. So it's pretty tight on the whole lot. But it's great. And the thing is, you can spend hours and hours practicing away. And my wife is wondering where I've gone whenever the time I come back. And I'm still frustrated because I'm still 2/10 away and I can't get that last little bit. No, that's the thing. Well, there's been rumours that Gran Turismo, the new game, the one that will go after GT Sport, may be premiering on the PlayStation 5 when it launches, which potentially is within the next 12 months. Now, what's your take on how Gran Turismo could improve, or what you think it might have in the next one, given that it'll be out potentially on the PlayStation 5?
Well, I think one of the main things that people will be looking for is a sort of a return to the old single player modes.
Yeah.
So you'll have the big Gran Turismo career kind of mode where there's lots of races to do.
Yeah,
so I think a return to that, but not to take away from the online, because I think the online on sport is very good, the way that they've worked the sportsmanship and driver ratings and you get matched up.
Yeah.
So the online just needs some tweaking here and there. Obviously, penalty system can be worked upon. But just making it Gran Turismo 7 and not Gran Turismo Sport 2. They really need to get back to the sort of the old way of things, because I think that's what most people would be happy with. But also, you know, just a return of the older circuits. I think people will love that.
Yeah, Trial Mountain, Deep Forest, Grand Valley.
Yeah. All of those. If all of those come back, people will be very happy indeed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things. And I had a really good one there. It just escaped me. I'll have to come back to that.
Well, I always remember it because it was like Grand Valley Speedway. I mean, that's what, you know, you'd be up at 2 a.m. trying to play this game and, you know, trying to race, do all your stuff and beat the times and things like that. And you almost had dreams about it after you went to sleep because it was that mesmerized in your head. It's the music as well, the music going on in the background and the tracks in every corner reminds you of a similar thought when you come back to it the next lap, you know. So it's they are fantastic. But I remember that in Trial Mountain. That was one of my favourite ones to try and do that. And if you hit the rocks, that was it. You were finished. It was a clunk of death with that one when it goes on. But, I mean, we've talked a little bit about GT Sport Online. And I think, to be fair, the penalties have maybe improved a little bit over the last few months. It seems to have settled down. There are issues, I think, when if somebody hits you and then they go off the circuit, then you end up getting the penalty. Yeah. And that can be a real pain because it can be like a 5-second penalty. And you kind of think, well, I don't know how they can fix that because that seems to be quite a common misdemeanor. In fact, I'm sure I saw a few videos where people had actually done it deliberately and they drive off the track once they've hit you. And of course, the other person gets the penalty. Do you think that's something that they should be working on, or do you have any advice for the chaps who are doing the penalties?
Yeah, they do need to work on that. To be fair, like you said, it doesn't happen all the time. You know, 90% of races will happen and then you won't get a penalty and it'd be fine. Or you'll get a penalty and it was deserved. It's hard. It really is hard to make a system that works 100% of the time for every scenario. I suppose that's why in real motorsport, you always have human stewards who have to assess every case individually because it's almost impossible just to decide for a robot to decide who's at fault, because there's so many factors in any incident. If I have any advice, work hard and don't quit. Make sure you get it right, because people will get angry.
Yeah, that's true. It can be. It's amazing how on a Monday, if it goes wrong, if they've changed it and you've had an update and it all starts going horribly wrong, how many people will complain straight away, isn't it? But I did like your videos going on to that last few bit there of when you think it's all going horribly wrong and you've ended up maybe spinning out and you're having to start from the back, you were saying don't quit. There's, you know, those videos that you're glad you carried on because then you caught up with the people in front. There was a bit of a argy-bargy in front and in turn you got a good result at the end of it. Because I think that's the worst thing you can do is rage quit, isn't it, when things just go horribly wrong and then you, because it really has quite a big effect on your DR and your SR. Have you ever come from that point and actually won a race where you think you're almost at the back again and you've come back through because there's been so much nonsense going on in front of you?
I'm not sure about winning. It may well have happened at some point. But certainly at least progressing through the field and getting a much better result. So the video you're talking about, I was in 18th in an FIA race. So it was a really high standard. I qualified 18th out of 20. So I was quite a way off. And I was just dropping back. And you're thinking, where's this going? I'm going to waste the next 25 minutes just lapping and dropping off over everyone. But then thankfully, there's a big group ahead and they start fighting. I managed to catch up again and just tactically work my way through. So there's always a chance, you know, that something might happen. And you can always learn a lot, especially the FIA, because you do one race. Yeah. Even if you're at the back, you can learn the tyre strategy, the fuel strategy, and then go back for the next race and use the strategy so you know what you're doing rather than going in without any knowledge.
Mm-hmm. No, that's pretty good, isn't it? Because I think the FIA is the ultimate standard for the series, isn't it, and trying to get up there. I've done a few nations races. I don't think I've done an FIA one. They do say that if you do the FIA and you do quite well, it's a good way of building your DR and SR. Is that something you found to be the case?
Yes, if you have a good result, you can go up a few thousand like driver rating points. So normally in a daily race, if you win, you might go up 800,000 at tops. It's really a case of just trying to beat players who are higher rated than you are And I think your rating will go up quicker. And normally in the FIA, the standard is higher, so you're up against better players. So if you beat them, you'll go up quicker.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really good. Now, going on from, again, many of your followers will be, you know, avid players of the game. I remember they're thinking, how do I start out? You know, what's the best equipment to get? I mean, for example, I've got a play seat and a Logitech G29 steering wheel and pedals. Do you think, I mean, that roughly together costs around about £300. Is that a reasonable starting off kind of, I mean, I know there are cheaper steering wheel and pedals that you can get. In fact, PlayStation have launched their own one quite recently for about £80, but I don't know how good it is. Do you have a preference or a kind of starting off advice for people who might want to get pedals and a steering wheel and a seat as to what might be a good setup for them?
Yes, it's a hard one for me to answer a lot of the time because I haven't had many different wheels. I've never had a Logitech, so I don't know how good they are. I've heard that they are good for the price. So a lot of the time, I think people do start off with Logitechs if they're at a sort of entry level in terms of budget, like a couple of £100. So if that's what you're looking at, if you just want to get a wheel and it and you don't have so much money, then yeah, maybe a Logitech, I think, is the way to go. Like the G29, something along those lines. But then if you do have a bit more money, CSL Elite from Fanatec or the Thrustmaster TGT. If you have a lot more money, then get the Fanatec Direct Drive or another Direct Drive. You're looking at thousands though for those. It just really depends on your budget, just how much you can afford. To be fair, most wheels are from Logitech, Thrustmaster, Fanatec will serve you well. I haven't owned many of them, so I can't really comment on exactly which one's the best. But
You're being very, very, very good, very apolitical, which is good. I can see you sounding not to say anything. To be fair, I mean, I've had my G29 for over 2 years, and it's done pretty well. The power lead was the only thing that broke. In fact, it was a bit of a kind of you wouldn't have remembered it from the 80s. It was the Tomorrow's World. There was sparks coming from my steering wheel. I thought, goodness me, I'm getting an electric shock here. And all it was the power lead. I hadn't put it in its proper, there's a kind of line that you put them in. And of course, I just had it down and it shorted over the years. And it was completely flat and it had broken. So the thing was buzzing away and sparking as I was playing. So it was, I thought this was a real, you could say, an electrifying moment. Unfortunately, not getting the lap times I needed. But I went on to one of the game groups on Facebook and asked if this was a common thought, and similarly it was, and I contacted somebody who said that they'd had the same experience, and would you believe it, they sent me a free repair, you know, a free replacement, because Logitech actually weren't that helpful in saying that it wasn't their fault. So that was their thing. But I think the gaming community is just brilliant. I mean, it's there, you know, you have that issue and someone says, oh, I've got a spare one, you can have it, and they send it up to you. So it's very, very kind when they do such a thing. But obviously you've got a direct drive wheel, which is, you know, at the top of its end for what you do. What kind of difference does that, you know, what do you say it does to add to the experience? Because some people say it gives you a bit more feel, or you're able to control the skids a bit better.
Yeah, it definitely gives you a lot more feel. It can give you more strength if you need it. I don't think you necessarily do need a lot more strength. But I suppose in terms of strength, it's one of those things that you never need 100% strength. It just comes through for half a second when you touch a curb or something. So it does add to the realism in that sense, that in those fine moments, it does become strong when you need it to be strong. But the thing I've noticed the most, or the two things that I would say has helped me the most by using a direct drive wheel, one is consistency. Because I can feel everything a bit better, I can be more consistent. So I can do better lap times, more consistent lap times. Whereas on a belt-driven wheel, I couldn't quite feel the car, so I couldn't be as consistent. And the second thing is just keeping control of the car in when you're spinning or losing control. Car oversteers a little bit. You can just react to it so much quicker because the feel, the sensation, just comes to you a lot faster. So you can be more smooth because of that. You can iron out the mistakes quicker, be more consistent. And on Gran Turismo, that helps with your tyre wear. So your tyre's a lot more fresh at the end of the race, whereas other people who are a bit more ragged, their tyres will go off and you could beat them.
Yeah. No, that's really good to know, because, I mean, I think we're all ultimately wanting to know how to get closer to the the best experience possible to help our driving. I know for me that the only issue with the Logitech system that I have, and it's more like the play seat wheel, to be fair, it's like the play seat construction, is that the steering sometimes moves. And I think in a rig, you want it to be really strong and so it doesn't move, because the last thing you want is your steering to move up and down when you're trying to go around a corner and that. But so it's quite interesting that, you know, when you get the proper ones that are kind of like scaffolding and they're all set up properly. I think yours is quite a rigid setup, isn't it? It's quite a strong kind of setup. It means that you're not going to get any unwanted vibrations or unwanted movement to make sure that you can concentrate on your lap times. But going on from that, I know that David Perrell, he says that Gran Turismo Sport is the best way to practice and even improve your real racing, and that's what he does most of the time. Would you agree with him that, I mean, he recommends doing 20 minutes practice and then no more than 3 races at a time and then calling it a day. I remember that in one of his earlier videos. Is that a kind of similar thing that you would recommend, or do you think just play as long as you want to play and race as long as you want to race?
Yeah, it's hard to say, because I know I think he's basing that exactly on being a real racing driver. And I'm not a real racing driver, so I don't know exactly what is going to help being a real racing driver. But I'd say it certainly can help in terms of your everything mental in a race. So your decision making, your reaction time, your consistency, your ability to concentrate for a long amount of time, working out what the guy ahead is doing and how to overtake them, working out what the guy behind wants to do and how to defend. Yeah. So all the sort of decisions that you have to make in a race, you can massively improve by playing any sim, but Gran Turismo Sport can definitely do that. In terms of the amount of time you have to play, I don't know. Maybe there is a science behind it, but I think just play as long as you need to without burning out. Because if you start playing for 10 hours, about the fourth hour, you're just going to start, your brain's going to get fried. So you're not going to be making the best decisions. So it's best, to not take really long sessions.
Yeah.
Make sure you break it up a little bit at least.
Oh, well, that's the thing. It's good to know, because that's what people are always asking, you know, how do they, you know, is there a good formula of practice? Because I think there comes a point when you kind of think, no, I'm not going to do another race. I'm tired enough. I've done my best. And that's probably a good decision when you feel, because if you're not really fully awake or fully kind of ready to go and have that excitement, almost that nervous excitement when you race, I think that when that starts to go, I think you've done enough. Yeah. For the day. Although it's hard, I have to say, when I've been trying to do those blooming time trials and I've gone into 2 a.m. and then realizing you've got work at 8 the next day isn't always that helpful. And there's no time, not like the old days 20 years ago when you could call in sick, you kind of get away with that now. But when they can see you and they can chat you on Facebook, YouTube and the whole lot. But what would you say, going on to, because you know, you've got a massive fan base out there on YouTube and you get lots of very, very funny comments. Is there anything that you think has highlighted or really made you laugh? I mean, there you are, you know, you're racing as hard as you can. You're very, I don't know how you managed to read the comments at the same time. And somebody says something that really, you wanted to kind of burst out laughing and say, I don't think I can take this, you know, continue on with this race. Has there been something that's really kind of distracted you could say?
I'm not sure I've had that exactly, but I mean, there are some humorous comments for sure. There are people that say some funny stuff or some weird stuff. I think the weirdest example recently was a guy, I was playing Wreckfest on a live stream. And normally I play Gran Turismo. Yeah. So he was, I didn't know that he was, in the end I worked out that he was just joking with me. He was trolling in a friendly way. But at the beginning it didn't seem like that. It seemed like he was being aggressive. He was basically saying, you're only playing this because you're being paid to play it, because it's a rubbish game. He donated to say that. He's given me money to say that. And then it just progressed more and more and more. And then his donations were going up, £2, £4, £8, £16, £30. And eventually he dropped 100. Goodness. And then he dropped 200. And then he dropped another 200. Just to say all this crap, really. But in the end, I worked out, if he's going to donate that much, he's obviously a fan in some ways. I think he's just joking about. But it's hard to tell on the internet when people... through text, you can't tell always what people... really mean, if they're joking or if they're serious.
Yeah.
In the end, I think he was being he was just joking about. But so things like that, you know, there's these weird, funny characters out there. And a lot of them do seem to find my channel.
Yeah. Well, that's, whenever I send you a tip on your channel, I always try and do it either at the end of qualifying and before you start a race. I think the last thing you need is someone beeping away up on your screen when you're trying to do a race and do well. But yeah, no, it's great fun. I mean, I have to say the community watching the comments are hilarious, and then seeing how you react to them and how you keep going and how you kind of pick and choose. Do you find that you know when you're reading them, you just try and find something that's the most interesting or maybe hasn't been asked before? Because obviously you get an awful lot of questions that do get asked similarly. How do you kind of pick that? Because it seems like quite a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get much time to look at the comments. I mean, I do. I always read through them. So it's just whatever catches my eye in the couple of seconds I'm looking. But yeah, there's a lot of repeat questions. You know, what wheel are you using? And I'll answer that a couple of times in the stream. But if I'm going to get that question 100 times, it's not worth answering 100 times because people just get bored of listening to the answer.
Yeah.
So you just got to pick something that's interesting, something that I can elaborate on for a couple of minutes whilst I'm racing, and that'll just see me through to the next question or the next point that someone's making. But there's no real formula to it. Just, that seems interesting to talk about. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I do like when you press your button and it was frequently asked question and then whatever, you know, so it sends them off to have a look at those in the last bit, which I think is quite good when you do that. Do you think that if your chat phrases and things that were put on there, the chat comments were actually read out loud, do you think that would be easier, or do you think that would be more of a distraction?
I've only ever seen that gets abused, the text-to-speech. When it gets read out by a robotic voice.
Yeah.
I can imagine if I did that right now and I live stream tonight, people would just abuse it and just spam a load of rubbish, and it would just get annoying. So I'm not going to venture into that.
No, that's a good answer, I think, because that's the thing. You wouldn't have thought that at first, of course, asking the basic question. But, of course, that's what happens when you do it. And I do remember a great case of that, actually. I don't know if you've ever seen it on YouTube, but there was one of my friends is a pilot. And at the time, it was about 10 years ago, people would go to the reception at a big airport and would give, it would be like in Abu Dhabi or somewhere, and they would put out a message for the person to speak. And because they would ring it out on the whole radio or across the whole, you know, like would such and such come to reception, that the way they were all kind of rude jokes and things like that. And of course, they didn't understand them at the time until everyone in the departure lounge started laughing, wondering what was being said, because they used to put all the words together and made it all work like that.
Yeah.
But I can imagine, yes, very quickly people would just put in ropey comments that were not, and then of course you'd end up getting demonetized or whatever else when YouTube come along and do their algorithm. So it's best probably, as you say, just to have it on quiet and things like that. Well, in terms of the future for next year, do you have any particular plans? I mean, I know they do like F1 esports at a lot of the Formula One events. Would that be something perhaps you might want to try and do or get involved in?
I would like to go to them. I was preoccupied last Wednesday when they had the final.
Yes.
I could have gone to that. I had to make loads of videos that night. But I would like to get involved with that. It does look like a cool series. I'm part of the Gran Turismo family, you could say now. So hopefully I can go to more of those events. Normally it's six per year. I went to three this year. It'd be good if I can go to those a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then a bit more kart racing. Like we spoke earlier, I would like to do some car racing, but we all know that that's very expensive and difficult to get into. And then, of course, just growing the channel even more. Just no real specific aim, but just make it bigger and better and more of the same. Right. And hopefully it grows even more this year than it did next year than it did this year.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure what you need, you know, when you have your, because you've got your channel membership, which I'm part of, and you need under the join, it could be like join at a five or whatever it is, and then sponsor a race at 10 grand or 30 grand. And then you might be able to kind of get the money you need to go and do a real racing series and things like that. Because I'm sure people would follow you even more with all of that. But well, look, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Steve. Thank you so much for doing this interview. As always, it's really informative, and I'm sure my followers and your followers who have been watching today will really take a huge amount from it. And we wish you a very Merry Christmas and a great New Year, and look forward to more amazing events in New York, Monaco, Silverstone, wherever they might be, Orlando, whatever, you never know whatever they'll do it next, and seeing you winning and continuing your path to even greater legendary status in YouTube, and of course in esports and motor racing as well. But to all our viewers and listeners, you've been listening to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, but I have been engulfed in the legend today that is, of course, Super GT, Steve Alvarez Brown. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
At cardioadvisor.co.uk, we can help you save thousands of pounds on your next new car or van. And we can also source second-hand cars as well. And we can save you money on car rental, whether it be in the UK and abroad. Just click our rental link on the website. And we'll give you a free gift if you trade in your car with We Buy Any Car using our special website link. So go to the website now and see how much you can save. And it's back to the show. Thanks for listening. If you're heading to Orlando this year, then you need Hattrick's Orlando Holiday Guide. It's packed full of essential and crucial information to make sure you get the best from an Orlando holiday. You can get it on Kindle or iBooks, or have a copy posted out to you for just £5.50, including free delivery to UK residents. Visit hughhattrick.com now for your copy. And enjoy Orlando. I'll end